Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our guest is Rick Solis. Rick is a fellow investor and a licensed appraiser. Rick, how you doing?
Doing good, thanks.
Thanks for joining us today. We're going to do two shows with Rick. Rick, how long have you been appraising properties?
I started in 1989.
1989. That's interesting because that was virtually the peak of that market. And then, so you got to see a lot of bank REOs.
It was the perfect time to start because it was the business was still booming for about 6 months when I was in it, and then it just collapsed.
So you got to see both cycles for a little while anyway.
Yeah, I was so young, though, I didn't appreciate it at the time.
At the time, 1989, did you even need a license?
No.
Okay, that came later.
You needed a business card and a clipboard.
Okay. As far as you can see, has education improved the ability of the appraisals?
No, I would say probably has not. They have not gotten any better. In fact, I think they got a little bit worse.
Okay. It's interesting. You know, I went and got an appraiser's license whenever the requirement for the education came into play. And I did it just because I wanted to be able to meet an appraiser and talk with them and use their language, if you will.
Yeah.
But I realized that whatever they taught me in there, my methods of figuring out property were already superior to what I was hearing. There wasn't a lot of, what would you call it, street smarts or practical information in the training, and I was surprised at that.
No, it's mostly book stuff, and a lot of that stuff doesn't really apply. I mean, it does. The theory applies, but actually, I mean, the nuts and bolts you really have to learn by just being out there and trial and error type of thing.
How did you decide to get into that business?
I bought a seminar from God, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was in Hawaii all the time and showing it on TV. And I bought his seminar.
Dave Del Dotto. Okay.
And I was going to college at the time, and I used his seminar, and I bought a bunch of houses. And this was like 1987, 1988. And I was not familiar with the town I bought them in, but it worked perfectly. His strategies worked great. And it didn't take too long to figure out that buying these houses in this area did not work out well for me. And the area was a part of San Bernardino called Muskoy. And I got a bunch of that stuff for no money down, and I used the first house as a down payment for the second one and just kept going. And after a while, I thought, you know what, I better figure out what these things are worth. So that's when I started doing appraisals.
Okay.
I went and I took the classes at college, and I went and worked for an appraiser for a year, and always with the intent of going back to investing. And you know, I left investing for about 10 or 15 years just doing appraisals, and then I went back to investing after that.
There's a term, MAI appraisal, appraiser, and the street version of that is made as instructed. Are appraisers put under pressure quite a bit to come in at a certain number?
Yes. In fact, that's why I left appraisals in 2004. You know, I was making so much money doing houses, but at the time, I started buying and fixing houses with the intent of, you know, I don't want to be an appraiser, or I don't want to deal with this pressure, and it's a lot of pressure from the agents, a lot of pressure from the loan officers, a lot of pressure from the sellers, and so that's why I left.
In 2004, probably through 2006, the pressure would have been to come in with a higher number.
Unbelievable pressure, and there were no comparables to support the value at all, so, I mean, it was really a challenge. And then when you did get the appraisal done, I mean, you were just getting slammed by the lenders. I mean, just were not happy with the comps. And they've never been happy with upward time adjustments where you're saying that the value's increasing, you know, 2 or 3% a month. They don't like that without, you know, really good support.
Has the pressure now changed to come in unreasonably low in an appraisal?
There's never pressure to bring it in lower. I mean, they never say, well, this, you know, we want you to come in at 150, even though it might be worth 180. But they do put your appraisal report through a lot of hoops after you're done with it. I mean, you got a review, underwriter will look through it, and if she can find something wrong with it, or if they can find something wrong with it, they will give you a difficult time about that. Then they'll have a review appraisal done, and then they have what's known as an automated valuation model, AVM, which is a computerized appraisal.
Okay.
Those are usually not a problem in a downward market because they're using comparables that are, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 months old.
Right, so they all might be even unrealistically high.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Those are, you know, those are the transaction's best friend in a downward market. In an upward market, those AVMs were just killing us, though, because same thing, they're using comps 4 or 5 months old and just didn't support the current market.
I never got the feeling that the mortgage broker really cared about how much difficulty it was. As long as the numbers showed up, they were able to make it work. I'm not connected to that business, but I had just gotten that sense that since they could get rid of the loan no matter what, they weren't too concerned about it other than if it doesn't come in, we can't do the loan.
Well, a loan officer years ago mentioned something to me, and the guy was pretty sharp, and he mentioned, you know, the appraisal is just a hurdle to getting the loan done. And I thought, you know what, he's really right, and
mm-hmm.
that's how everybody views it. It's just a hurdle to getting to the completed transaction. So nobody really cares. Even the investor doesn't care. I mean, nobody cares so long as they can get the deal done and comply with the guidelines.
I guess the end holder of the note cares.
That person cares.
But it used to be the same people, and now, of course, that's changed.
Yeah, it really, the quality issues really declined as mortgage brokers got more popular. When I started in 89, it was still, you know, banks and direct lenders were doing a good portion of the business. But as we got further from that time, more and more mortgage brokers started doing it.
Do you see that having some ramifications? So, you know, the stuff that we're going through, do you see some ramifications for the appraisal world in general?
Yeah, well, they've changed the law, I think, January 1st, but brokers aren't allowed to order appraisals anymore, so I've heard. I mean, I wasn't dealing with too many mortgage brokers towards this year, so I'm not sure if they finished, you know,
I think it actually goes into effect now somewhere later in the year, but I think it does, in fact.
It's not a law, it's just going to be Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are going to require that, you know, the broker's not involved in the appraisal transaction anymore.
It reminds me of if you have an electrical contracting business in your union, you know, you call into the union, you say you need a journeyman, you don't specify who, you just get a journeyman.
Wow.
And in essence, that's what this is like. You get an appraiser, and I think the assumption is since the training is supposed to be there, then all things are equal.
Well, it should be, but I mean, there's
no, of course
a lot
it's
of
not.
Pressure. I mean, and as an appraiser, you got to really be adept at dealing with a lot of pressure to push a value, or nowadays it's looked the other way on repairs, you know, not so much as push a value.
Mm-hmm.
Before, I'd say maybe the late 90s, FHA never allowed anybody to select their own appraiser. If it was an FHA transaction, you had to use a staff appraiser or somebody that was on their FHA panel. And that, back then, I mean, FHA values did not get pushed, and that was a much better system.
Well, actually, licensing, the whole purpose of licensing was, in fact, I thought, to make everybody almost an FHA equivalent appraisal. That's what that education was supposed to be, was now you have an entire group of people who have been trained to do a certain level of appraisal. It didn't work out that way, but I think that was the general idea.
Well, I think it could work out that way, and their intent was, but you've got to get the people... the people whose commission depends on closing the transaction, they have to be outside of, you know, the appraiser can't be involved with them. And if they are, that kind of, it kind of clouds the appraiser's judgment.
Yeah. You were involved in the last downturn appraising properties from, let's say, 90 to 96. How would you compare this downturn to the 90s?
Now, that was a long time ago, so I could be thinking, you know, now that I'm in the midst of this one might be different. But this time seems a lot more severe than that time. That time, it seemed like 1990 was kind of a flat year, and towards the end of 1990, values took a pretty sharp drop, maybe 10% within like a 6 month period, and then after that they just gradually declined, maybe a 0.5% a month, and that went on for years.
Yeah,
five or six years.
That was exactly right. I mean, it literally was 5% a year or so for the next 5 years.
That's the way I remember it, and that was a much easier way to transact business. I mean, you knew your $200,000 house was going to be worth maybe $199,000 next month, and maybe $190,000 in 6 months. I mean, it was still painful, but now it's just, you know, 2 or 3 months we might be flat, and then the next 2 or 3 months we might drop, you know, 10%. I mean, now it's very difficult.
Have you noticed that some areas are less affected than others as far as the price declines?
Some areas where they're all new houses or far-out areas or all first-time buyer areas seem to have just got pummeled. I mean, literally, almost 60% of their value is just gone.
So you've noticed a theme on the downside more than on the strong side?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what about kind of the not the kind of inventory that's the standard house? Let's say now you have a Victorville area and you have a manufactured home on a couple of acres or something. Is that taking even a worse beating?
You know, I don't. When I get somebody calls me with that kind of appraisal, I'll usually try to turn that down because that'll be so difficult to find any sale activity at all. That would be a difficult thing to find, but. When I do, you know, I'll still look at, you know, I'll look it up and see if I can find any activity. I think just the demand for that irregular product, the stuff on the dirt roads or the stuff with propane tanks instead of gas.
Yeah.
Or they've got a well or a manufactured home or any of the weird stuff just is not moving. In fact, I'm trying to do I'm doing a rehab now, and I bought a house without a garage and didn't think that would be a huge problem, but now I'm seeing that no garage, huge problem.
Yeah, see, we could have told you that.
Well,
you know what?
You can build a garage, but
yeah.
You know, I got the price on that. It's almost $18,000 for a two-car garage with a foundation and permits.
Wow. That's hard, especially in an area where you're buying the house for $60,000.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's tough. Well, maybe you can flip that to another investor who wants to hold it as a rental.
Well, I kind of penciled in getting a garage when I bought it.
Yeah.
I was going to try to sell it without the garage, but now I'm seeing you got to put a garage in.
What's your general gut feel for 2009 as far as prices?
To me, it seems like most of the stuff now, and I really look at, you know, what something sold, and you can really find how price is dropping pretty easy right now because there's so many sales in the first-time buyer area like Moreno Valley or something. You can see them coming down like 2% a month. Some months maybe 1.5%, some months 3%, but on average they're dropping about 2% a month, and that seems to have been going since September. And I have a feeling that that's going strong now. Some months it's even more. I have a feeling we're going to drop something like that this whole year, somewhere between 1% and 2%, probably closer to 1.5% for the whole year. And that might go away in like June, July, and August, the really heavy buying season, but I have a feeling, you know, by the end of the year we'll probably be down 15% or 20%.
Now, do you think,
I hope not.
You think that might be different in LA or Orange County?
Well, in those more established areas, what I've noticed is, like in my town, I live in Laverne, which is you know, one of the last towns on the eastern part of Los Angeles County, next to Claremont, Pomona, and Glendora. And in my area, I would say sales activity has literally just dropped 75%. There's just nothing moving at all. None of the homeowners are willing to sell for 30% below what they could have got a couple years ago, and none of the buyers are willing to bite. So the only things that are going is the occasional short sale and, you know, divorce or REO, but they are still coming down, and I would say here we're probably dropping a steady, you know, 1.5% a month.
You know, what's going to be interesting is see if that occasional REO becomes a dominant product.
You would think.
Yeah.
Because if there's only like 4 or 5 sales in the city each month, and there used to be 20 sales a month, and now those 4 or 5 are all, you know, REO sales, it's going to drag stuff down.
I got some information from a title company that kind of shocked me. What percentage of sales do you think Victorville had that were REO last month of all the sales?
Last month, REO stuff, because there's still a lot of short sales, so I would probably say, I would bet 100% of all sales were REO or short sales, but I would probably say the REOs would be at least 50 to 70%.
Yeah, it was 92.
Wow.
92% of all sales was REO.
So you I know, guess, that's another market where it's really hard to find comps because just nobody's willing to buy there. It's just not moving.
Well,
I would bet their sale volume's down, you know, at least 50%, maybe 75%.
That was another the question that I was just going to ask you was how difficult would it be to resell a property that's completely fixed and priced 50 grand more than the REO? I guess you already answered. It would be virtually impossible.
Yeah, I don't think it would. I mean, there's so many home three-bedroom, two-baths for sale up there for 100 grand. You know, I don't think anybody could get excited about buying one all refurbished for 150.
Well, you know, I think you could probably find the willing couple that didn't want to fix the house for 35 grand.
Yeah.
But it goes back to really the point of the discussion is how would you possibly get it to appraise?
Yeah, where do you find a comparable?
Does there have to be a comparable?
I mean, at least one somewhere that's at your price level or higher.
See, that's really difficult when 98% of them are vacant and need work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, pretty much the whole town of Victorville is vacant and needs work. And believe me, I got a whole bunch of them up there, so I know.
Are you now? You having decent luck just renting them? Is that what your idea is right now?
Yeah, the ones. Well, I had some that I kept, and I've rented those, and those tenants have never moved. But my rents are low, and I've never moved them up.
What is the rent now for say a 3-bedroom up there?
I'm getting for a 3-bedroom built in the 80s in Victorville, I'm getting about $950 for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, and that's with me paying trash and water.
Mm-hmm. Rick, you're appraising all of our wholesale deals now for the loan business. And in dealing with other investors, what are some of the misconceptions they have about how to determine the value of what they're buying?
I think the one that gets them the worst, and it gets me too, you know, if you don't do your homework, is just by going off the sales prices in the MLS. Because those are incorrect. Depending on the market, some markets it's 100% of the time, but at least 50% of the market, I mean, those sale prices are incorrect.
When you say incorrect, I mean the agent was just careless in how they put the numbers, or they just there was so many concessions or other things that actually weren't disclosed for the real number to be shown?
It's both. And I started looking into this, too, because I was like, well, you know, why are these incorrect so much? And a couple other agents mentioned to me is that I guess the high-volume REO agents, some of them just have, like, their assistants putting that data in, you know, the $10 or $12 an hour people.
Yeah.
A lot of them just don't care.
Wow.
So they put that in, and sometimes they'll just go right off the listing price. And, you know, sometimes they're making an error, but a lot of times it's sales concessions. I just did an appraisal today, and my first three comparables had sales prices at about 180, and their listing prices were, you know, 169.9, and they'd all been on the market for like a month.
Right.
So they all sold magically 10 grand above what they were listed at, and they're on the market anywhere from 30 to 60 days. And someone just decided, you know, I like that house so much, I'll pay an extra 10 grand. I mean, if you're just going off the sold prices on that one line, you know, you get 50 comps, and they're one line each, and it says the sales price and the sale date, and you're just going off that to get your value. You'd never know that those all sold maybe 10 grand more than they were listed at, and it took them a while to get them sold.
Yeah. What are the sources of the comps that you get? I know you have multiple sources. What are they?
Well, the best source is the MLS, because you can piece together what it actually sold for just looking at the listing prices, and they'll mention the sales concessions and stuff in there a lot of times. But you always have to confirm that with some version of public records, which is either Title or I really like First American, which is also RealQuest. There's three or four sources. I think DataQuick is one of them. And but you got to spend money for that. And you know, the good data is probably $100 a month, and you got to be willing to spend that. If you just get the Title stuff, a lot of the Title data is kind of old.
Yeah. What's always been curious to me is they never all have the same comps. Why is that?
You know, I started thinking about that because I remember I had that problem a lot, you know, in the 90s. And I asked the guy about that a long time ago, and I didn't think about that until you mentioned that to me last time I was at boot camp. Some of it has to do with geocoding, the way they kind of plot where these properties are located. Sometimes, you know, they just have the wrong map code or they're, you know, just not in there correctly. And the data's actually gotten a lot better where you'll get maybe 90% of comps on both data sources. But back in the early 90s, I had to have two different assessor sources because about 25% of the comps just didn't show up, you know, on one data source. You had to pull them both.
Did you used to use, there was a data book that I got called CMDC?
Yeah, I used to have those CMDC books.
I like those.
You can still get that data online.
Those were a lifesaver for me for auctions.
Those were good because that data was actually taken from real appraisals.
Exactly. Yeah, that was very good. That was very good information.
I think you still get those.
Yeah, I think you're right. As a matter of fact, I think that somebody told me that. I haven't done it, but I remember that helped me a lot when I was doing the auctions. I could go through and appraise 100 properties very fast. Pendings and listings, are they now a real necessary part of the appraisal process?
I spend a lot of time on the listings. It's kind of hard because there's so many of them, and there's a chunk of them that are a good chunk that are short sales that are maybe worth $150,000, and they'll list it for like $99,900. So it's hard unless you're going to go print them all out, weed through them, and there might be 100 of them within, you know, a mile of your subject. I'll print that 100 up as a one line just to give you an idea of what that date is, but I'll spend more time looking at the pending sales, with the pending sales being the upper end of my market value. So if I got three or four houses that sold, you know, were listed at 150 and went into escrow within 30 days and they're all in relatively decent shape, then my house is probably worth less than that, you know, or, you know, no more than that.
Yeah. What would be the spread that you would consider? You just said upper end of market value. There must be a lower end. And what percentage does that range equal to, approximately?
Are you saying in the...
I'm appraising a $200,000 house, and you have an upper range that's acceptable and a lower range. What is that spread acceptable? What's that acceptable spread as far as a percentage?
Well, I think if you get above maybe 5% of the upper end, like say you got three or four sales, and after you make all the adjustments, they're, you know, somewhere between like 190 and 210. I'll usually come in somewhere towards the middle of that, but the closer you get to the 210, I think the greater your probability of getting a review appraisal ordered on you. And a review appraiser, you know, is kind of hit and miss. I mean, some of them have an axe to grind, and they'll just cut away and take it down to 180,000, and some don't.
Is the goal when appraising a property for an investor different than appraising a property in a resale setting when you already have a resale customer?
So, like doing an appraisal for the Norris Group versus a retail buyer?
Yeah, exactly. In other words, since you have that range of market value that's acceptable, when you have a sale price that falls within the higher range, is that an acceptable number? And then when you're doing an appraisal for the loan business, let's say, do we try to have a range that's in the middle or the lower end?
I'm usually towards the mid range on all my stuff, but when it's a retail transaction and I've got a buyer, you know, ready, willing, able buyer, and you know, it was a recent maybe the house sold within 2 weeks and they had a couple offers on it, that kind of gives you an idea of where it's at. Even if it's a little bit high, I mean, you've already had a few people, it sold quickly versus, some of the transactions I do for the investors, it's a little tough to determine exactly where that is, you know, cause almost that retail buyer is almost a comparable in itself.
I think that's right.
It's almost like a fourth comp.
Okay, I agree. Okay, Rick, you know what? We're out of time for this segment. Thank you for joining us, and we'll pick this up in our next segment. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.